Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme. And I have two guests in the studio with me. Isabel Doherty, Chair of the Donegal Hospice. Isabel, thank you so much for calling up again.
Thank you, Greg, for having us.
Not a favourite job in this role of yours, is it, coming up to see me?
No, not really. But anyway, we'll get over it. We'll get over it, Greg.
Okay.
But it's lovely. Thanks for having us.
No,
thank
it's
you.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
And we have a fresh face in Phil Roddy. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
It's great to have you in with us, and thanks so much as well. It's not easy coming on the radio if it's not something you're not used to. But Phil, you're doing a really important job today because you are helping us launch. You're helping us. It's Jive for June, isn't it?
Yep.
Is that what we're doing? It is.
Yeah.
Who said you were nervous? I can't even get my words out. No, you're helping us launch Jive for June, and we'll talk about the importance of that. But I also want to talk, if you don't mind, Phil, and as much as you're comfortable with, okay, what Donegal Hospice means to you. And it's they were there for you, weren't they, in a really incredibly difficult time of your life?
Yes, it was a very difficult time. And, Ronan passed away on the 18th of January in the hospice. And he suffered from, or his ailment was, amyloidosis of the liver. It was something, it's quite a common ailment in Donegal, but rare elsewhere. But it's disease ailment that is known in Donegal above all other counties in the country.
Now, Ronan was incredibly popular and very popular down in Max Mace on the High Road in Letterkenny as well. He was a big sports fan and avid Finn Harps fan. He was involved volunteering down there as well. Ronan touched so many people in his life, but of course not least his own dad too. He was an amazing young man, wasn't he?
He was an amazing young man. He lived life to the full. Max Mace, he worked in Max Mace for 26 years, and we always said that Max Mace was his second family. The McIntyre family was his second family, and Finn Harps, that was his passion. He went there as a steward. And he was really one of the biggest fans.
He was there for the good times and the bad too.
He was there for the good times. And I always said that if the lights ever went out on Finn Harps, he would be the last person out. But Finn Harps were absolutely fabulous to Ronan.
In your grief, which you're still in at the moment and working through, Phil, I hope you got comfort from the outpouring of love and affection towards Ronan. I'm sure you were aware of it, but I hope it's brought you and the rest of the family comfort in this difficult time for you.
Yeah, we were aware to a certain degree, but we didn't appreciate what he meant to the community.
Mm.
He was absolutely part and parcel of the Ballybofey and Snorro community, and he was he was part and parcel of the Letterkenny community because of his involvement in Max Mace, and he got to know the wider community, the people coming into Max Mace, and they all appeared to know Ronan, and he was there, as I say, for 26 years, and we didn't appreciate how much the whole community thought of him.
Yeah, indeed. And as I say, maybe not just immediately, but certainly in the time to come, I hope that helps you through this. As did the Donegal Hospice, Phil. Do you want to talk to me, as again, only as much as you're comfortable, about the role the Donegal Hospice played in Ronan's passing and for you as a family?
Yes. The Donegal Hospice was a lifesaver, because Ronan had this ailment and was in and out of hospital and suffered grave pain for quite a long period, and particularly from Christmas on. And when there was really no diagnosis made until actually he had been admitted to the hospice. Mm. So he entered the hospice with no diagnosis. Yeah. It was only he came into the hospice for pain management.
Mm-hmm.
That was really... But leading up to the hospice, it was the doctor, Roland's doctor, who got in touch with the hospice. And then when the hospice came on board, we had respite care at home for Ronan for about a week. But we saw that really wasn't going to work, and then he was admitted to the hospice. But really what we were facing into was care at home, and it was going to be a non-runner because we were two elderly parents and we just really, we wouldn't be able to cope.
Yeah.
And it would have been full-time care. We'd have carers in. We had a hospital bed installed. We had to clear out a bedroom with a hospital bed installed, a hoist, wheelchairs, commode, and all this. You know,
it's overwhelming, isn't it?
It's going to be overwhelming altogether. Mm. And then whenever we came into the hospice, the care, you know, the welcome there was.
Mm.
And Ronan was so at peace. You know,
which in turn is for his parents at a very difficult time, because you want to do your best and you're trying to cope with everything. This allowed you the space to perhaps deal emotionally with what you had to deal with and to work your way through other things, rather than having to try and deal with the care at home, which would have been very, very difficult.
Absolutely. We wouldn't have been able to cope.
And the staff, it's not just the services, is it, Phil, in terms of the practical stuff, but it's the staff and how they treat you too and how they treat Ronan and others that are in their care.
Absolutely, Greg. The care that Ronan received was exceptional. Exceptional. The love that he received. And the way he was looked after, there was one... night, there was a heavy snowfall, and one of the nurses the following morning went outside and made a snowman for him,
just the little things,
a little thing.
Yeah.
And then the care that we received as a family, we were there in a unit. It just wasn't a hospital bed. It was a whole unit. There was a bedroom.
Mm.
Then there was another room off the bedroom.
Yeah.
So there
was a sense of normality there as well, to some extent.
And, there was one day that my wife Pauline was sitting on the couch, relaxing, and a member of staff came in and said, "No, you're not relaxed there. Here's how you relaxed." And she got two pillows for her. Oh. She put one under her head and under her feet, put a blanket over her, put a plate of biscuits beside her. Now you can relax. How lovely it was.
It's beautiful. It really is beautiful. Yeah. And it's amazing, Phil, that you can speak about this part of your life, which I imagine is probably the toughest part of your life, but there's elements of it that you can recall with a smile on your face, the treatment of your wife, and obviously the treatment of Ronan. That's what the Donegal Hospice is, isn't it? It's that you can see happiness in such a dire situation.
Yeah, like my impression of the hospice was, it was a place where cancer patients, terminally ill cancer patients, spent the last day of their lives. No, that's not it. Now, from my experience, that's not it.
Yeah,
it's a whole loving, caring place, and you know, it is fantastic for the people of Donegal to have this facility. It's just a wonderful facility. Mm. And I suppose we can say as a family, we have been privileged to have experienced the hospice.
How long was Ronan in the Donegal Hospice, Phil?
Ronan was probably about a week in the hospice.
So it was a short spell, but so important to him in his end of life.
And if we have one regret, it is that he wasn't there for longer.
Yeah.
And have experienced the...
Understood. But for that time in his life, it was good for you, it was good for Pauline. How are you and Pauline coping now, Phil? Are you okay?
We're okay. We're back doing some of the things.
Yeah.
But there is an empty chair. There's an empty space. I have lost a great friend.
Yeah. But do you feel him with you? He's always around you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's guiding you today.
Yeah.
Phil, there's no doubt about that. And can I say, I don't know why I'm so proud of you for speaking like this. And so I'm sure Ronan is looking down on you, incredibly proud of you, as is your wife as well, speaking so well and in such glowing terms in such a difficult time. I'll let you grab your breath, Phil. You've done an amazing job. And I'm so full of admiration for you, Phil. And Isabel, as I say, it's the Donegal Hospice story. It's when people are going through what the likes of Phil and Pauline have gone through at the most difficult time. But it just makes that, I don't know how to phrase it, just makes it a bit easier.
Yeah,
and you can look back at that last week with happy memories in that awful situation.
We actually had great fun and great crack with Ronan, didn't we, Phil?
Yeah.
Because he was just full of fun. He was full of fun, and he was very happy to be with us in the hospice. He was happy coming into the hospice, and he was happy to be there. And, you know, one memory that I have of him is Phil was going home, and Phil got to the door of the apartment, and Ronan called him, Dad, and the next thing, he just blew him a kiss, you know, and said, see you later. And Ronan was very happy with us, and we just adored him. And it was our pleasure to look after you and Ronan.
Well, it's not hard to see where Ronan got his personality and smile from, is it? He didn't lick it off the ground.
No, he did not.
He didn't lick it off the grass anyway.
No. And we remain great friends with Phil and and Pauline. We really do.
And that continues. The relationship continues.
It does.
And that's that's why people feel like they want to help. That's what you're doing, Phil. An amazing thing in helping what we're going to be talking about now, because it's so real. You're one of us. You're the same as any one of us, and you're speaking from the heart, and that really gets to people who don't... The thing with the Donegal Hospice is, if you don't mind me saying, and we'll move on to it too, is that... And my mum was in there as well, so I understand what... But I didn't have an experience of that beforehand. So I was a little bit like you, Phil, in that you imagine what something is. Or what it does, or what, you know what I mean? And then you see your loved one in that setting, especially when home care is not an option. And then you realise, oh, this is what this is. And that is why so many people who've had an experience of it become fundraisers or advocates or promoters of it, because it's only till you are in that environment and the wonderful staff and everything and the way it's laid out and the way people are treated and the love and care of the person and their feelings and the respect that's shown to them, dependent on their belief system or not or whatever, everything is considered and understood. Mm-hmm. So it's only when you engage with it that you become an advocate for it. And I think that's a great testimony to what you do there.
Yeah.
But it's all, a lot of it is done through fundraising. So tell us what's there at the moment, and are there any plans at the future what are funds used for currently, other than...
Well, we will be building on more apartments, which we have six single rooms and two apartments, and Ronan was in one of the apartments. Mm. And that just, the family can stay there at night, and, you know, it's just a room off Ronan's room, but they're still able to see Ronan. And then we're building on four more apartments. So Hopefully it'll be soon. Like with COVID, it just took a whole...
Knocked everything back.
And it also knocked the price up an awful bit. But anyway, we'll get over that and we'll get the sod turned and get going with it.
Great. All right, so. Okay. So we are launching Jive for June. It's kicking off from Tuesday the 6th of June. And we'll tell you all about how you can get involved in this and how you can help raise funds. And it is an important part of the fundraising process for the Donegal Hospice. So we want this June just to be the best, the best Jive for June ever. For what you do and for what you will do into the future. So it's simple enough. Do you want to explain it?
Well,
because me and Phil have been doing all the hard work.
Well, that's
so
all right.
Far,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It's time for you to earn your crust. Come on, Isabel.
Right, okay. Well, the year before last, I started the Jive for June because we had no church gate collections, no coffee mornings, and no sunflower day. So then that year, I ended up with 55,800, I think it was. And then last year I decided to, even though we were coming out of COVID a wee bit, I thought, right, we'll go again. And I think I tortured everybody. So I ended up with 121,000.
Amazing. Because I thought matching the first year, but to double it and then some the second year was astonishing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was brilliant. But everybody come on board. They weren't jiving, Greg. They were doing car washes. They were doing, kids were doing trampoline. The kids got involved in schools by jive and whatever they wanted to do, Some was doing a 5K, like whatever they wanted to do, they were doing it. And they were doing mountain climbs and all that. So we ended up with 121 and delighted. I don't know. The reason I'm not starting it on the 1st of June is because of Relay for Life, because I don't want to infringe on their fundraising. So that's why we're going for...
So what do we do then? How do we get involved?
Well, you can video your jive and send it to Highland Radio, and they have a platform there that we will show a different jive every day, and people then donate online, or indeed they can get the sponsorship cards from myself, and then other people just go and do different fundraisers.
Whatever you want.
We are
to
available. We're available to go out on the day if they want us there.
Yep. Now I believe that we are going to be playing a jive song every day on Highland Radio.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's going to happen on David James's show. But it doesn't mean you have to do it then.
No.
Or whatever. It's just to be in the mood and to jive for June whenever it suits you. So to sign up or donate, you call Isabel on 087-238-9607.
Yeah.
We're going to put these numbers up on all our socials and stuff. Or you call 912-5656. So you video your performances and send it to thedonegalhospice@gmail.com. We'll post it up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Donegal Hospice. We're going to be doing all of that too here on Highland Radio, and that'll all work its way out.
Yeah.
And we'll give people close to the time an email address or how they can get them into us, because we're working together and we get them all up there and people can get all this to donate, get donation cards, and we just need lots of people to do a little.
Yeah,
that's all. We don't, you know, I mean, if someone wants to raise 50 grand on their own, fantastic, but if 1,000 people raise 50 euro, you're there as well.
There's kids as well do wee bake sales along the side of the road and all that. So like every penny counts, Greg, and it gets us to the high figure. But I wasn't going to do it this year because of Chrysler and everything else. But then I thought, no, I will.
Yeah, it's so important to all of us.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is kind of a soft launch really then. So isn't it, we'll go full whack closer to the time then?
Full whack closer to the time. We'll get...
And it'll be across all of our programmes and people will be reminded.
Yeah.
But you can go on to the Donegal Hospice Facebook page right now and get information.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Are you do jive?
Yes. But
do you?
She's a wonderful woman.
Good mover.
She's a wonderful person.
Phil, are you jiver? Do you jive?
Yeah, my wife. That was one of my great attributes, was that I could dance.
So that was what attracted her to you in the first place.
So. I think so.
Were you at a dance? Did she look across at you? You looked across at her. You extended your hand. Do you remember the song you danced to?
No, no. We met at the nurses' dance in Antigua.
Oh, lovely. I bet you Pauline remembers
there's
the song.
There's a story behind
tell
it,
tell us the story, Phil.
There's a story.
You're not getting out till you tell us.
No, I have no other recollection.
What about her sister? What about her sister?
Oh yeah. Well, the first night then when I went back to meet her, called at the house, and her sister came down the stairs, and I looked at her, and I thought, yeah, that's the one I was out with. But no, Pauline came down later, so I looked at the two of them, and I didn't know which of them I was with.
Well, anyway, you got there in the end. And how long have you been married now?
We were married 51 years.
Wow, so you just did the half century not so long ago. Congratulations, that's right. Phil. Listen, I'm not going to repeat myself, Phil, but everyone's really proud of what you've done. We've loads of messages coming in. They recognise that you're clearly a lovely person from a lovely family, and are really... grateful that you shared your story to help us understand. And Isabel, anything that you want to finish with? As I say, here in Highland, as we get closer to that date, we'll be telling people how they can get involved. And it's just really to get people's thinking caps on now, isn't that it, really?
Yeah, it is, Greg. And look, we want to thank Highland Radio. They've been very good to us all down through the years, and we're very grateful for that. And David James as well really puts his heart and soul into this. So it's good, so we'll get it going this year again. Yeah. See how we fare out,
And credit to you, Isabel, because through your efforts as well, 170 odd thousand euros been raised to help families like Phil's and others, and it's into the future as well. Yeah. Thank you so very much indeed.
Thank you,
Isabel Doherty, who's chair of the Donegal Hospice, and a special thanks to Phil Ruddy, father of Ronan. And again, as I hope you know, Phil, the love for Ronan coming in here. We have a message in from Max Deli and others who he touched in his life, which I think is a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
Okay. That is Phil Ruddy and Isabel Doherty. And we'll be back with more after the break. And I love working here, and I genuinely love doing this job. And I enjoy interviewing everybody, but sometimes you get to do an interview that is very, very special. And for me, chatting to and listening to Phil was incredibly special. And I feel very lucky to have been involved in that, because he's clearly a lovely, lovely man, and the father of another lovely, lovely man who is still very much missed and always will be. But as I say, just a real honour to speak to Phil and Isabel, of course, but particularly Phil. I'll remember that for a very long time. A message in here. We're sending the following message in support of your programme today on the Donegal Hospice. We'd like to thank the hospice staff for their loving care and support given to Ronan Ruddy and his family in his final days, and facilitating our visits to him in the hospice. Also to Pauline and Phil for being great parents to Ronan and supporting him in all his endeavours. We will miss Ronan's smiling face in the shop. To Pauline and Phil, God bless and take care, from all at Max Deli, Eunan, Rachel and Ronan McIntyre and all the staff. And another from Anne and Raffo. We really admire Phil and his family. He's an exceptional man, and our prayers are with him. And we'll join with you in that as well. Okay, I didn't want to cut that conversation, so we ran into an ad break here. We're going to be talking about barbecuing after these. Okay, we head now to beautiful Harvey's Point on the shores of Loch Esk, and we're joined by their executive head chef, Colin Bradley. Good morning, Colin. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, he can't hear me yet. I'm going to kick him out and bring him back in again because it's just connecting to audio there. Okay, I'll throw him out and bring him back in. Any questions on barbecuing? I'm hopefully going to cover most of the obvious ones, but stay with us and we'll get to any that you send in. Colin, can you hear me? No, we aren't getting Colin there. I don't know what's going on. On whose side that is a problem. Wherever lies the blame, these services should have been in place before these good people were allowed to come here. But sure, look, at if we'd have done that, no one would ever have come here, would they? Your contributor is saying that the refugees in Donegal are fleeing for their lives. 60% of refugees are not fleeing from war zones. They're economic tourists that face... that's a fact. So no wonder people are protesting. The government getting 30 million per month from the EU tells you exactly what their policies are. Well, it's not a fact. I mean, there are some, of course, but to say they all are is just not a statement of fact. And we'll get to more of those. I just want to try Colin one more time. Colin, can you hear me? Right, no. Okay, I think I know what to do there. And it's called Reset Absolutely Everything. Right, okay. I couldn't agree more with Sinead, what she said about coming together to focus on the root of these issues. Maybe not all, but most of the current problems around housing, cost of living, MICA, the blame lies firmly at the feet of the government, who are allowing refugees, the people fleeing for their lives, to be scapegoated. And as a result, it pays directly into the hands of the bigots and racists who seek to cause distress. Now, again, I just want to be really careful here. I understand we tend to use emotive language, but there are people with concerns that are neither bigots or racist. I really agree with Sinead. We are a welcoming community, also always have been. People coming here really need shelter and support. I think we need to recognise that we have a huge problem with the manipulation of people's genuine concerns by organised far right. We know this from monitoring from the Gardaí and others. We need to tackle this manipulation because it is causing division. Doing an all fault of the foreigners, we forget ourselves when we mistreat people seeking asylum. Time for people to stop falling down the online rabbit hole of mis and disinformation. Check your sources. A very few people are bringing disrepute to our county when they attack these centres and people. Whereas our Cade Mila Fulcher, it's important to remember that it's not illegal to seek asylum. And look, at we have to have our concerns, and we have to make sure that we can provide proper care for not only the population of Ireland, but the people coming in here as well. And that's a conversation we need to have. But we also have to remember it's only a couple of short generations ago, during the famine, as it's called, that millions of us fled here because there was no food, no money, no employment. We had no houses, and we fled, and we travelled all around the world. And at that time, we didn't necessarily go there with money in our pockets. We went there to work and to make better lives for ourselves. But it is only a short time ago in our history that we left here in our millions, some never to return. There was a huge depopulation of this country. It's just really not that long ago. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, fling the gates open. I'm not suggesting that for a second, but we do have to be, don't we, conscious of our own history and all of this as well. Greg, the genuine concerns people have are to do with the government's mismanagement of the influx of refugees. Bad actors in the community take advantage of these concerns by fanning the flames of fear with misinformation. I, for one, welcome the positive input Sinead and her group are bringing. Government is messing up healthcare, housing and refugees for us all. It's not necessarily the people coming in. Right, we have finally made connection with Colin, the executive head chef at Harvey's Point Lochess. Colin, good morning to you.
Greg, hello, how are you?
I'm good. I just know for a fact that you are better at producing amazing food than you are at connecting to a Zoom call.
I've got a weakness from computers. You should be thankful I could turn it on.
Hi, Kamir. It's great to have you with us. And it's not surprising, is it? And thank you so very much, Colin, for taking the time out of your busy morning. It is barbecue season now. We've got a spell of really good weather, and it's an opportunity for people to get out and enjoy the outdoors. And we love to stick the barbecue on in this country, don't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. And at the moment, the weather is just fantastic. So that's a great opportunity to avail of that facility and to get the outdoors and to enjoy it.
Yeah, we were chatting earlier on to Michaela, actually, here just around about 11 o'clock. And one thing I need to get, and I wonder from your perspective how important it is a meat thermometer when you're cooking outside, you know, because we don't necessarily have the guidance from the oven or the air fryer.
Yeah, so the meat thermometer will be absolutely, in my opinion, it will be essential. It's something that we have. We have seven kitchens here at Harvey's Point. I know it's indoor, but we've got meat thermometers everywhere because just to get your temperatures correct, they're going to give you a very accurate read. So you know exactly now if the food is safe. So once you're cooking, once you get over that 75 degrees, you know that you're good to go. See, with barbecues, I suppose the main issue is with barbecues, people turn them on to get them up to a very high heat. And then you can obviously, you can overcook or you can burn the outside and the inside won't be cooked. The whole secret with barbecuing is get your temperature and then just turn it down to a very low heat. Barbecuing should actually be, it's an indirect heat. So you're not looking for the food onto a direct heat. It's more indirect where the heat is coming up from, be it gas or your charcoal or your wood. So basically, you bring it up to temperature and then you'll just turn everything down really low and you'll just use that heat that's just transforming through. And it's actually a very slow process of cooking. So when you're outside, you can sit down, you can enjoy the sun, have a glass of wine, whatever you want, and just enjoy the time and just let the food cook nice and slowly. And that then you're going to guarantee that you're going to get the food cooked true, especially if you're using, a lot of people will barbecue chicken, ribs, and that they're actually quite slow processes to get those cooked. So burning the outside is the thing that you have to watch out for. So get your temperature nice and low, bring your temperature up initially, then get to just reduce it down nice and low, and then just cook your food very, very slowly. And then use your temperature probe just to make sure that you're above that 75 degrees. Once you probe into the center of the food, and then you know you're safe to go.
Yeah, and Colin, that's a really interesting bit of advice from you, which I will take on board, because maybe we're conditioned by the flame grill burger kind of adverts and stuff, and we think it's sort of the fat bursting into flames and that's actually cooking the food. But it's the plate, the heat of the plate, really, that then we're looking to cook our foods with, so we don't burn the outside whilst leaving the inside undercooked.
Yeah, absolutely. The flames are for show. We see, guys, if you have flames, usually what all the flame is really doing is it will give you, but it really is burning. That's what anything you put a fire over directly over anything, it's going to burn, you know, and you're not looking for that. So really what you're looking to do is get those down. Yes, obviously when some of the fats from the meats, especially you have a high fat content, possibly in your burgers, possibly in your sausages, that's going to come down. It's going to create that little small little flame is going to come up. That's absolutely fine. But the last thing you want is an actual fire burning.
Brilliant.
That's only going to burn the food.
Fantastic. You're
not looking for that. So you would burn your coals, your wood, whatever, and then let that go out. And then it's just that residual heat that's underneath. That's what's going to actually cook the food.
Mm, okay. Now, I find that meat sticks. What am I doing wrong?
Obviously a little bit of oil. So a brush is a really good thing. Just have a very hard bristle brush and just to brush the bars on the barbecue, just with some just ordinary, not really olive oil will burn, but just an ordinary vegetable oil would be ideal. And just to brush it on. And then also you could brush your meat before you put it on. Mm. The reason too that certain meats stick to barbecues is a lot of people use a marinade. So they would possibly have marinated ribs in a barbecue sauce. That's naturally going to stick. So it's a little bit difficult maybe to stop that. But just to brush it lightly with oil. Some people also would use some tin foil possibly. If you were using fish, I would always cook fish. I would say if we were doing a nice piece of salmon, you would maybe put some Cajun spice on. Then I would wrap it in tin foil, a little bit of oil on the inside, actually fold it into a parcel. You could also add in some veg into that and just sit that gently on the side of the barbecue or up on the top grill and just let it cook really, really slowly. Mm-hmm. And it's absolutely beautiful. Once you open the foil off, then it's beautiful.
Yeah. And it creates an event too, doesn't it?
It creates an event, absolutely. Or you could also wrap it in a little bit of parchment paper or greaseproof paper just before it goes into the foil. So you've got that double layer and the parchment paper won't stick. So when it comes out, it's not stuck. Just because it's a barbecue doesn't mean that everything has to be seared and grilled and burned. You know what I mean? You can also cook. You can use your parchment paper, wrap it in tin foil, cook really, really slowly, which is beautiful as well. It's absolutely, for fish, it's a perfect way of doing it.
And how do you know that your fish is done, but you don't overdo it?
Yeah, again, you're back to the same process. So you can use your temperature probe. You can just pierce the foil, go into the center of the fish or whatever it is, and you're going to watch your probe. And you're looking for that magic number is 75 degrees or a little bit above. That's the magic number.
And is that it's killing anything that could be harmful? Is that it's as basic as that, isn't it?
Yeah. So we also got to be careful with our food, Greg, in regards to if we have a barbecue, so it's a beautiful summer evening and we're bringing out food to the barbecue, we've got to be very careful that that food comes directly from a fridge or a cold room, you know, that comes from your fridge in the house, that is held at that between 1 to 4 degrees or 1 to 5 degrees, that is kept at that temperature, that is not maybe left sitting out for an hour and a half in the sun when the bacteria is going to start increasing. We just got to be careful with that we take it from the fridge out and directly onto the heat. People will say you need to let the steak come to room temperature. And what I would be saying to you, no, I would say on a hot summer's day, just take it from the fridge, put it onto the barbecue, cook it immediately, keep everything covered because we always have flies and we've got the you know, everything flying around outside. Mm. So just to keep everything nicely covered, be it with a nice plastic container or whatever, just to keep everything safe and nice and hygienic. That's very, very important.
And I presume, too, we have to be careful of the interaction between cooked meat and uncooked meat and even the utensils we're using for each one or other.
Absolutely. We're lucky here in the kitchen here, especially here at Harvey's Point, and all professional kitchens would have a colour code practice. So we would have different colour boards for every product. We would have different knives for every product. In our own personal kitchens at home, we're not lucky enough to have that. And especially when you come out onto a small space and you're evening out on your patio area and you've only got a small table, things can get mixed together. That's very, very important to keep. And it's a very, very good point. Cross-contamination is highly dangerous.
Right.
So to keep everything nice and separate is really important.
Yeah, and regularly wash your hands and stuff as well, presumably. Yeah.
Absolutely. Regularly wash your hands. Yeah, and disposable paper is great. You'll maybe have one, what we would call a cloth or a dishcloth, just for using hot produce. Other than that, just have a roll of disposable paper that when you wash your hands or when you're picking up something, that you can just have a bin beside you, that you can just dispose of it, because we can also get cross-contamination from dirty tea towels, dirty cloths. And be very careful also with our utensils as well. Keep one for your cooked produce that you're turning your food on your barbecue, and then keep one for your raw produce. That's very, very important.
Now, obviously, you talked about chilling out. You know, don't rush things. Sit down, have a glass of wine, 7-Up, whatever it might be. But us amateur chefs, you know, we stand there and we throw the meat on it, and almost instantaneously we're flipping it, and then we're flipping it, and then we're flipping it. Right, so... Yeah. Is there a correct technique? So you put your chop or your steak or your burger down. How long, because you can't resist seeing what's happening underneath, long do you leave it before you sort of start interfering with it?
Yeah, you're going to leave for 2 to 3 minutes on either side. Especially, we'll talk about, for example, a steak. And you did, we'll go back to just the issue again, you said with sticking, okay? When you put a steak on initially, it will stick. Now, if you leave that for 3 to 4 minutes, it'll stop, because it's after caramelizing and it's after forming a crust, and it'll actually nearly create a barrier itself, so it's easier to lift off. It's only if you immediately, within 30 seconds, you go to flip it, that's when it's stuck, because that meat is still very raw and it's after sticking to the bars. But once it starts to caramelize, it's easier to turn it or to flip it on the barbecue then. So that also helps. That also helps your sticking issue. But you will be definitely looking at leaving it for 2 to 3 minutes. Plus, if you've got the nice bars on your barbecue, if you're flipping constantly, you can do a nice decorative pattern. So you can almost turn it at a 45 degree and back again the same angle. And that will give you the nice crisscross formation. So it will. And so realistically, if you're putting on a steak, you'd only be looking at possibly turning it twice throughout the cooking process.
Burgers and stuff, you'd want to... Chops is something I find difficult to judge. Now, I always end up being... I don't have it. I'm going to get one of these probe thermometers. But I always find with chops, I overdo them because I find it more difficult to sort of get a read as to when they're actually cooked. You know what I mean? Is there any tips there?
Yeah, well, the main tip, what I would suggest again, most barbecues now have a wonderful little rack, which sits again above where we will cook. This is probably the best piece of equipment on a barbecue, because what you do is once you're cooked, or you think you're cooked, you're going to sit it up then. That's going to do two things. It's going to rest the meat. While the meat is resting, it's still cooking because you're still at temperature there. So it's still cooking slowly, so it is. When the meat rests, basically, what that's doing is that's letting the natural juices back into the muscle again. And it's just keeping the meat nice and tender. If you take the meat off straight away, it's like if you put your hand on something hot, you kind of shrivel up.
Yeah.
But once it comes back, once the cooler kind of hits again, just kind of relaxes it. Lets the meat relax. And that's the most important thing. So, for example, we'll go back to your chops. So you'll cook them possibly, let's say, 4 minutes, then turn, then 4 minutes again. So we're looking at about 15, 16 minutes there. And then we put it up on top in that resting, but it's still cooking in that process. Yeah. The juices are going back in. You'll probe then, check that you're at your 75 degrees or a little bit above. And then, you know, but there's no harm to leave that chop there for 8 to 10 minutes just to rest nicely, and you're going to have a much nicer product.
Beautiful. To eat than it's going to be right. Okay. Better. So that's the red meat and the fish and the chicken there as well. What else can you throw on a barbecue? Like peppers can, but anything like that that's also nice to, to have a bit of a.
Everybody goes for, I suppose, sweet corn is very, very popular.
Yes.
Your corn is very, very popular. Really, really lovely. Just to brush with a little bit of butter or a little bit of oil again, or put some spices onto it. Obviously, your peppers or your skewers. Little trick with a skewer, if you're using the wooden skewers the night before, just get a little container of water and soak the skewer in water before you skewer any of your products. And what that will do is it just means that the skewer won't burn. Sometimes they burn.
I've done it. The two ends are on fire.
Yeah, the two ends are on fire. So soak it in water the night before, and again, keep your heat down and keep the flames down, and then you won't have that issue with your skewer. Or you can also wrap the ends just in a little bit of tin foil.
Yes.
Just a bit. If you cover it, keep your meat and your chicken all nice, very, very tight on it, and then just wrap the ends in a little bit of tin foil. That'll just stop the skewer burning and it'll keep it nice. Obviously, the metal skewer is a good trick as well, but the metal skewer burns your fingers for the wooden bandits.
Okay.
Everything has an advantage and a disadvantage.
And what should we, do we go in and buy our pre-made coleslaw and potato salad or pasta salad, or
takes all the fun. That takes all the fun away.
Give
that
us a quick recipe then.
Very, very simple. So let's look at coleslaw first. You're just looking at some shredded cabbage, shredded carrot, and just some mayonnaise and some seasoning.
That's it.
Very, very simple. A wonderful idea. What I do with barbecues, and I think it's one of the best things, and I know my children absolutely love them, is I bake some potatoes. So if I've got a barbecue going on this evening, you want to enjoy the barbecue as well yourself. So in the morning, wrap up 6-8 very, very large potatoes, bake them off in the oven, in your tinfoil, bake them off in the oven, then let them cool, and then just slice them into nice big slices. Mm. Just put some spice, put some herbs, some Cajun spice, whatever, on those potatoes. Again, just baste them in a little bit of oil before and sit them on the barbecue, and you've got the most wonderful product there. You've got a lovely, lovely, it's like a big, thick crisp.
Wow,
you know,
sounds delicious. Absolutely, right. Colin.
Absolutely lovely.
Thank you so much for your time today. Congratulations to you and your team as well, by the way, in the recent recognition of Harvey's Point through TripAdvisor, because of course what you do, it's behind the scenes an awful lot of the time, but it's all part of the experience. So fair play to you and your team there as well, and congratulations to all at the hotel, and we really appreciate your time this morning.
Much appreciated, Greg. Lovely talk.
Have a lovely day. Take care. That's Colin Bradley there, Executive Head Chef at Harvey's Point Loch Est. So either A, you were never going to have a barbecue. B, you were, and now you've got some great advice to move forward with. Or C, you've said, stuff it, we'll do that this evening. Because you know what? The good thing about your local family butchers is that they often put on great deals, you know, great packages of different types of meat. Now, I don't want to discourage anyone from going into other shops, but you know, if you go into your big supermarket and you grab those burgers there and you grab that there and you get to the till, and next thing you know, you've spent 50 or 60 euro on meat, but you go into your local butcher, a lot of them have some great offers on batching various meats for a barbecue for much, much less than you might expect, and much less packaging as well. So if you are and you don't already do it, certainly consider going into your local family butchers there on in your town or village and see if they do any barbecue packages, which can make it much more much less expensive, but also too the meat's there fresh, sitting there in the shop ready to go. You don't know how long it's been in plastic packaging or what have you. Right, okay, I am absolutely starving now, and I've been sitting looking at the people at Donegal Hospice have brought this up, and for those of you who are watching, it's the choir, right? Which choir? Right, okay, brilliant. Well, the hospice did bring cakes as well. Okay, well, anyway, someone brought this in, and they did it in a beautiful gesture. But I'm starving, and it is a beautiful cupcake with this beautiful blue icing on the top, and I've been sitting looking at it, unable to eat it because I don't have the time, and it's absolute torture. If you're ever looking to get secrets out of someone, just sit them in front of that cupcake and tell them they can't eat it, because I've been looking at it now for 40 minutes. And I know in this ad break, if I start eating it, I'd just come back with it all over my face and I'd be choking on it. So it's going to have to wait till 12. Rightio, we have time for some of your comments coming in so far this morning as we head towards the end of the programme. A caller says, how low can you get when you attack Ukrainians, refugees who do not want to be here and are victims of war who are suffering grief, PTSD, uncertainty, depression, and some kids reporting suicide ideation? Please do blame poor government that you and sadly most Irish people have elected on every general election for the accommodation, health, justice and abuse crises. Insanity gone mad, re-electing them with all the crises they constantly mismanage and create. Time for a change, methinks, long last. Thank God the ward looked after Irish refugees from the famine, the civil war and the troubles and also emigration. Greg is right. Ukrainians are not here for the fun of it. They're here for the money, says a listener there. All I can do is be honest. And I've said it before, and is just that if I was there with my family in any of the cities that are regularly being targeted by missiles or drones, would I hang about? I can only ask myself this question honestly. Would I hang about or... with the risk of a missile striking the property or whatever it might be, or soldiers just coming up the driveway with their guns out, would I hang around or would I get out of there? And the honest answer, if I ask myself that honestly, I would do anything to protect my children, which means I would take what I can and leave. Maybe I'm a chicken, I don't know, but that's what I would do. And that's the only way I can put myself in their position. Now, of course, that comment was directly towards Ukrainians, and that's why I gave that example. Then someone else might say, yes, but that's them. But what about these people? And I don't know necessarily enough of what's going on in that area, but I can only certainly say what I would do if I was in a place and I thought my family were under threat. A massive thank you to the crew at Biddy's of Barnes, who served up lovely food when we stopped off there yesterday on a bus trip. Yeah, indeed. It's a lovely wee spot, Biddy's. I haven't been there for years since the new guys took over. We called in there and didn't have, I think I had a sandwich and there was soup there. I don't know. But anyway, it was just a nice setting. Hi, this is a text for the man who put 3 bags of his household rubbish into the community bin at the Cathedral car park in Letterkenny. This includes a glass bottle. Shame on you. There are glass recyclable bins everywhere in Letterkenny town. No need for it. Hi, when I was putting my application in, this is for the redress scheme, to the county council through the appointed facilitator, one of the questions was, do we agree to pay back any money you get over and above what the government allocated you? I worry this would include Coleman Legal. Thank you. Well, Gary, isn't it? It is. No, Carp. I've just had a memory outage there. But anyway, the wording he said is a little, Dave, the wording he says is a little, can be a little confusing. Could I just make the point that privately owned property landlords can do whatever they like with their properties? Government and county councils need to start building and stop endless expensive HAP payments, which ultimately is taxpayers' money. Okay, listen, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you to all of you who listened to the show and took part, and for those of you who watched it. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Thanks to the team, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, assisted by Niamh. We'll be back, as I mentioned, at 9.